Hello and welcome. This is the FNR News Hour on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. I am not George Nikian or Luis Taffer. I am Adriano Del Monte. Pleasure to be with you here on this Wednesday afternoon. Plenty to get through in today's program. Plenty of news coming out of the A-League and the Matildas. The Algarve Cup gets underway tonight. Exciting times. The Matildas in action against Norway. We'll hear from some of the key players in the lead up to that. Plenty of news in Europe as well. A big name Italian international has come out of retirement, confirming he will make himself available for upcoming friendly fixtures for the Azzurri. There were some Spanish La Liga fixtures this morning. Real Madrid in action. Find out how they fared a little later in the program. And some big injury news coming out of some of the top clubs in Europe. PSG's Neymar at the center of attention there. We'll hear from Jonathan Howcroft as well. He caught up with Carlos Alberto Diego this morning on the Journos. Plenty to get through at FNR underscore radio is where you can find us. We're on Twitter. Share your thoughts. Have your say. We'd love to hear from you. Let's get into the headlines. Plenty to get through in today's program. As I said, the Flair saga is where we'll start. That continues after the Sydney Derby. We'll hear from Adam Peacock and Mark Bosnich on the issue. Certainly, you've got everyone talking. They will share their thoughts shortly. Attentions, though, they turn to the Melbourne Derby this weekend in the A-League. Plenty of talking points in the lead-up to this one. We'll hear from a former Victory player who is very excited to take on his former side and teammates for the first time this weekend. In Europe, as I said, a legend returns. Gianluigi Buffon has confirmed he is coming out of retirement to return for the Italian national team in the Azzurri's upcoming friendlies against Argentina and England. In Spain, Real Madrid stunned. Zinedine Zidane's men sumped to a fifth La Liga defeat of the season. And finally, a Brazilian blow. Neymar expected to miss the next 6 to 8 weeks through injury. A very, very interesting story, this. Contrasting reports whether or not he'd actually be fit in a fortnight to take on Real Madrid in the Champions League. But the player's father, Neymar Sr., suggesting he will miss 6 to 8 weeks of action. We'll get to that later. We will start with the A-League today, though, and the Flair situation, which has dominated discussion right across Australia. Sydney, West Sydney, they took on each other at the weekend. A very intriguing fixture played in heavy rain. And Adam Peacock, of course, of Fox Sports, spoke about this issue, uncovering a story about certain fans sneaking in a day before kickoff.
Day before, 5 flares were found in the toilets behind the Wanderers Bay. So they were trying to sneak them in the day before. Now that, to me, doesn't exactly say to the New South Wales Police, hey guys, we're just going to have a quiet night. We're not going to do anything silly. We're not going to do anything illegal, which in the definition of the term is what ripping a flare is in public. It's obviously only going to have one effect on the establishment and those that are trying to control the crowds. Not that they really need controlling at A-League grounds. It's so overhyped, it's beyond belief sometimes. But that's the environment that's been created, and unfortunately it isn't helped when flares are ripped.
Mark Bosnich has also had his say on the situation. Very, very strong in his viewpoint on the issue indeed.
Just for one last time, and I've said this a million times, they are the flares illegal. Okay? Simple as that. Whether in a future date, you know, we do something or whatever with the authorities, what, that's irrelevant. They are illegal, it's against the law. Okay? Simple as that.
So as a result, the RBB have been banned by their club for the upcoming clash against Perth Glory on Sunday, and hopefully we don't see a repeat of that behaviour again. But let's look ahead now to the Melbourne Derby this weekend. Friday night, big fixture as always. City and Victory, 3rd and 4th in the league respectively. Victory just 4 points behind their rivals. 3 defeats in their last 4 in the league. Very, very important for them to get a win here. Lots of talking points in the lead up to this one. And we heard from Melbourne City's new signing, Oliver Bozanic, who spoke ahead of this clash in which he will take on his former side for the very first time.
Everyone's been so welcoming. So I'm very happy to be here and looking forward to the adventure ahead. It's important for us to bounce back and have a good performance. Hopefully that leads to the right result against Victory.
Well, it certainly promises to be a big game indeed, and Bozanic's former teammate Costa Barbarousis also spoke ahead of the Friday evening fixture.
Yeah, it's crucial. Like Reece said, the boys responded perfectly on Saturday night. We needed that, and the way we went about it was fantastic. The boys' attitudes were spot on, and like Reece said, we need 3 points again on Friday night. And if we get that, then we're in a good position. We're hunting them down for third position at the moment, so we need to definitely get that, and then we can go from there. You know, we're a very fit team, and Ant's got us very fit, and all the boys are pulling up really well, like you saw. And I think we overran our opposition on Saturday night, and we've got plenty of time to recover for Friday night's game, and we've already started our build up towards that, and the boys are feeling fresh.
Certainly looking forward to that clash and all the other A-League action taking place this weekend. Well, the Matildas get underway in the Algarve Cup tonight. For those that don't know, the Algarve Cup is an invitational women's football tournament held annually in Portugal, scheduled to take place from tonight until the 7th of March. The Matildas, the highest ranked nation at the invitational competition. Exciting times ahead. The girls certainly excited for the challenge. Let's hear from defender Claire Polkinghorne.
I think it's going to be a good opportunity for us to get some games together this year and sort of pick up where we left off last year and continue that momentum, and as well as preparing for the Asia Cup, which is the big one for us. Obviously they didn't do as well as that they wanted, but they're a strong team and they're definitely going to cause us some issues. So it's going to be a really tough game for us. It was really good to get a couple of good wins over them late last year, and it sort of gives us a little bit of a mental edge that next time we go to play them, we'll have that, I guess, fear factor about us. And if we can consolidate that again at the Algarve Cup, then it'll be really good for us leading into Asia Cup if we do have to play them again, which we probably will in the later stages. Yeah, it's the first time we've played in Perth, so it's a good opportunity for them to come out. And, we like to play an exciting brand of football. And one thing I can promise is, the girls will be putting in 100% and wanting to play entertaining football, and hopefully the crowd will enjoy a really good game. We had fantastic support here in Australia for our few games last year, and if we can get anywhere near that, it'll be awesome. And Perth fans love their football, so I'm sure they'll come out in numbers.
So the Matildas come in with a big opportunity again to prove themselves against some of the world's very best nations. And one player we're certainly looking forward to watching in action, Sam Kerr, of course. She set her sights on some good performances ahead, particularly in a World Cup in future.
I still have a lot of learning to do as a player. I don't think my finishing's up to par, which people think is crazy because I score a lot, but I get a lot more chances than I'm finishing. I just want to be the complete player. I don't know if I'll ever be happy with my performances because I always want more. But I just want to help the team out in any way, whether I'm playing, in the starting 11, on the bench, not in the team. I just want to help the team out, and I want to win a World Cup, and it starts this year with winning the Asian Cup. So I'm excited for what the Matildas has to come, but I think as a player, I still have a lot to learn and grow, and that's the exciting part.
Good luck to the Matildas in the 2018 Algarve Cup. Well, it's time for us to take a quick break here on the FNR News Hour. We'll shift our attention to Europe. Stick around. You're with Adriano Del Monte on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal! Cahill, it's his day! Now can't spell that, Ronaldo! You just cannot write scripts like this.
FNR News. With George Danikia and Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back. This is the FNR News Hour on FNR Football Nation Radio. You're with Adriano Del Monte, and we are bringing you all the latest news right across the globe. Shifting our focus now to Europe. Keep the tweets coming in. We're at FNR_radio if you'd like to share your thoughts on any of the big stories breaking right across the world today. We'll start in Italy. Gianluigi Buffon has confirmed he will come out of retirement making himself available for the Italian national team's upcoming friendly fixtures. The Azzurri set to take on England and Argentina next month, and Buffon has said that there's nothing to add other than that I feel a sense of responsibility and faith, which I still feel I must give to the national team during this transitional moment. There is a cycle of delicate friendly games, and I thought I would go on a holiday for a few days, but when the national team needs you, you have got to be present. It's a form of faithfulness and responsibility towards Italy. Buffon, of course, capped by the national team 175 times, an Italian record, not having appeared since the Sweden debacle that saw Italy miss out on a first FIFA World Cup since 1958. Well, while his national team future appears sorted for now, his club future, though, remains unclear, with rumours intensifying, suggesting that Buffon may leave Juventus at season's end. Serie B side and Buffon's former club, Parma, tipped with a move for the legend of Italian football. While with Juventus, the Bianconeri have lost a key member of the backroom staff with Pablo Longoria. He was the club's scouting manager over the last 2.5 years. He has made the switch to Spain, joining Valencia. While in La Liga now, we've already had a shock in the round of La Liga action. Two midweek fixtures to kickstart the midweek round of Spanish top-flight action. Real Madrid in action earlier this morning, local time. They travel to Espanyol, a side who have had some wonderful results at home this season, with this clash proving to be another famous night for the small club.
Granero, loves the skill, lovely ball too. Sergio García, can he make the cross pay? Return ball to Moreno, it's Espanyol, it's 1-0 to the Pochis. They've done it in the final seconds of the game. And what a finish to this performance, which from Espanyol.
So 1-0 is how it finished. Zinedine Zidane's decision to rest Cristiano Ronaldo backfiring as Madrid slump to a fifth defeat of the season. Just three last season, so five defeats well and truly out of the race for the title now, with Barcelona, well, even more comfortably clear at the top. The midweek round resumes tomorrow. Key fixtures include Atleti Leganes and Malaga taking on Sevilla, while Friday morning, local time, the round will be completed with Barcelona's trip away to Las Palmas Friday morning, as I said. Over to France, Samir Nasri has been officially suspended from football. 6 months is the ban. The matter was discussed on my Euro show, which airs live Monday through Thursday, 1 p.m. here on FNR. Have a listen to the guy's summation of Nasri's 6-month suspension. While we're in France, Samir Nasri, of course, the former, well, Arsenal, Man City, everyone player, he's made headlines for the wrong reasons. Rick, facing a 6-month ban for doping charges that appeared in 2016.
So at the time, he was actually on loan from Manchester City to Seville. He decided to take a trip, a holiday over the winter break, if I'm not mistaken, to Los Angeles in America. He decided to undergo some drip treatment for an injury, as well as to obviously revive his body. But unfortunately, when he came back to the Rojiblancos, he underwent a test. They found that he was actually... The substance that he actually had in his body contravened WADA policy. It also went against UEFA. This ban has now been imposed by UEFA, and it all probably comes at the wrong time for Nasri, as he was trying to build up, trying to get back into the French national team ahead of the World Cup. Unfortunately for him as well, he's also left his Turkish club, Antalyaspor, over the January period. So he basically has zero chance of playing at the World Cup, and it's a shame.
Staying in France, the uncertainty surrounding the injury suffered by PSG star Neymar continues to confuse the football world, with the father's player contradicting the already contrasting reports suggesting his son will miss the next 6 to 8 weeks through injury. He came out and said that PSG already know they will not have Neymar in the next few games, 6 weeks a minimum, because this treatment could last up to 8 weeks. He went on to say that that is already certain regardless of surgery. What we can't do is something that may cause a fracture in the future. He went on to admit that his son will certainly miss the Real Madrid clash, despite PSG manager Unai Emery suggesting there may be a chance he will play. Neymar was, of course, injured in PSG's recent Ligue 1 clash with Marseille, a match they won 3-0. Frenchman Kingsley Coman, who was injured while playing for Bayern Munich against Hertha Berlin at the weekend, is said to be in doubt for the World Cup. A huge blow to the player, club and country, as the youngster came off second best in a collision with Hertha's and Australia's Matthew Leckie. Coman's club teammate Robert Lewandowski is making headlines for, well, not the reasons that Bayern Munich fans would hope. He's recently changed agent, which is the same agent that Neymar currently has, but reports surfacing suggesting he will not agree terms on a new contract with Bayern Munich, opening the door to a sensational move to Real Madrid. With the pressure mounting on Ronaldo, Bale and Benzema and the rumours around their futures, Lewandowski could be the new man to join Los Blancos next season after the World Cup, with confirmation coming from Sky Germany that he will not sign a new contract with Bayern Munich. A huge developing story there. And finally from Europe, the fastest man on earth, Usain Bolt, has revealed that he will be playing an official football match at Old Trafford. The football world held its breath as Borussia Dortmund was potentially tipped to be a club for the world record 100-meter holder. However, he's just playing in a charity match, so he's not actually signing for a top club, but he did reveal, "I've signed for a football team." That was early, just to wet the lips, but he's come out and said he will captain the World 11, which will take on Robbie Williams' England side, which will be in June, a couple of weeks before the World Cup. Bolt was also linked to a move to South African Premier League team Mamelodi Sundowns, but that move did not materialise either. We are off to a break here on the FNR News Hour. Still to come, we'll hear from The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft as he discusses a few pressing issues in the Australian game. Plenty more still to come here on the FNR News Hour. You're with Adriano Del Monte on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR News with George Danicchia and Louise Taffer on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the FNR News Hour. Now we're getting into our play of the day. And of course, it's Jonathan Howcroft on the journos earlier today. He caught up with Carlos Alberto Diego to discuss the recent FIFA visit to Australian shores. He also went on to touch on Perth Glory's stunning 97th minute win against Melbourne City at the weekend. And also City's up-and-coming superstar Daniel Arzani. Sit back, relax, enjoy this. Howcroft going in-depth about some of the pressing issues in Australian football.
Yes, there's so much to talk to you about. And of course, I'm getting my feel of I don't know if you call it afterglow of FIFA's visit. Would it be the rubble of FIFA? you tell me what it is, what you've heard. But basically, we've had Johnny Didelitzer talk about it on Monday. We had Dave Davidovich. Lynchy's had his little piece. But you're the guy, and with no disrespect to everyone else, but you're the guy who's all over this. You're talking to people all, you know, all day, every minute of the day, every hour of the day on this sort of stuff. What's your assessment of everything that's gone on with the FIFA visit?
So what seems to be the consensus is that everybody's pleased with the process. So it remains to be seen what the outcome is, but the process appears to have been positive.
How much has that got to do with the fact that FFA are not taking part as a member of this proposed working group?
An enormous amount. It's still yet to be confirmed what FFA's role in this, in the Congress Review Working Group will actually be. But as part of this scoping process, it does seem to be very significant that they weren't driving the process, that FIFA was very much in control. We've had the story about FFA, a number of FFA executives being asked to leave one of the delegate meetings. We saw the press release that was put out by FFA on the Thursday evening, which was just very clear. This is FIFA's this is FIFA's process now, and clearly that's allowed some of the stakeholders more freedom and given them more confidence in the process than they had previously. So it feels like this, what we saw last week, has created a new starting point. So everything from that delayed March 30 original deadline to this point has been a grey area that we will look back on without much fondness, and we can now almost start with a new blank sheet of paper and say, okay, this is how the future will be determined, based on the Congress Review Working Group that FIFA will establish, based on what happened this week, with what feels like a much greater sense of empowerment from a very broad range of stakeholders.
Is the perception of the FFA over the last 18 months unfair in that it appears, and what people are thinking, is that they have controlled the process, they have controlled the voting of the member associations, and they've controlled it to keep power? Could it be that they really, really, really are worried that if too much is given to the A-League clubs, that the rest of the game will suffer? I mean, that's what they're saying. There seems to be relief that they're not involved, that they don't appear to be a member of the working party going forward, and everyone's saying, thank God that's clear. But is it because of the fact that people think that there was something a little bit underhanded with their involvement in all this process, or is it really they wanted to make sure that their role as custodians for the game, the total game, the grassroots community, NPL, that was looked after?
So I want to take that and try and retain three separate ideas. The first is quite possibly, based on what Stephen Lowy said in the aftermath, in particular, of the failed EGM on November 30, that very much is his remit, that he is very much concerned about the totality of Australian football, and he has its best interests at heart. And as he would argue, a member of an independent board, that he is best placed to have that broader understanding of what the whole of the game requires. And I wouldn't argue against anybody who took that and took that at face value. The evidence of the previous 10 or so years would suggest that there is more to it than that. You look at the way the inability to democratize the Congress, the way the board has been, each director has come on nominated by the member federations and elected unopposed, would suggest that there may be something else going on.
But the lawyers would say that's our way of protecting the game, because if we opened it up too much, it's this almost paternal approach to the game.
I think that's an excellent word. Which would take me into the two other areas. One being, I don't think that's their role. Now, they argue that they have a corporate responsibility under Australian corporate law to do what's in the best interests of the organisation. I think philosophically that it's the stakeholders, and the Congress should reflect the whole of football. And if their decisions are bad, then so be it. The game suffers, but they're the incorrect decisions that the stakeholders have decided upon. Which then kind of shuffles me into the third train of thought, which is, it's disappointed me that this has always been presented as a club's power grab. Now, the clubs definitely agitated throughout this process. They led the forces of opposition. And if this sort of stopped at an earlier route, it would absolutely have looked in black and white as a Congress that used to be 9-1 member feds, 1 A-League, and becomes whatever it would have been, 9-5 or 9-4, which definitely would have been presented as a big win for the clubs in that respect. But it should never have been that. It should always have been, what's the best outcome for Australian football? Who are the stakeholders that need to have a voice? And it seems reasonably clear that FIFA arrived last week with that similar expectation, that there needs to be greater female representation. The players need a voice. Fans need to be listened to. The 10 A-League clubs are one body, but there are a number of different clubs within the pyramid. The member federations historically have been seen to represent near enough everybody in Australian football at the Congress, which doesn't feel satisfactory. So I've in answer to your original question, I feel like we could definitely take Stephen Lowy's position and the FFA's position as one of quite paternalistic leadership, doing what's in the safety first best interest of the game. But I don't think that's how it should have been run, and I don't think that's how it should be run in the future. And whether that's successful or not is almost by the by. There is a democratic principle that we need to adhere to.
Absolutely. And I think we've got to... We will make a lot of mistakes. By the way, through this process, we'll make mistakes, even without the FFA involved in this working group, because I'm already getting... we had Johnny Didlitzer on Monday, of course, as part of Football Extra, the chief executive of the PFA, and already getting questions for Johnny about why do the PFA, why would they be granted two votes out of 16? You know, and he has to defend that now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there'll be these question marks over, you know, the powerful groups getting more say than, say, the community groups or the double AFC, for example. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, to think that this is going to be a smooth process, and then when we go into the next stage, of course it's exciting because it's football people, it's a broader voice that's running the game, but we're still going to make mistakes. There's still going to be complaints. We're football fans, for heaven's sake. I mean, really, as someone said, one of the questions, of course, the boys have got football bosses, Michael Zapponi and Tony Pignard have got David Gallop on Wednesday nights, and they're asking for questions over Twitter. And one of them, one of the questions that came through is, ask David, you know, what's it like working with the most unhinged supporters in the world sport when you're working with football fans? And we are. We're cynical. We don't trust anyone. Everyone's an expert. It must be really, really hard to satisfy. We almost need Bob Hawke being, you know, someone that could bring us all together somehow.
Yeah, it's an unenviable task when you put it like that. But the dollar figure that drops into his bank account at the end of every fortnight or month or whatever would soften the blow somewhat. Yeah. But I there's an element of it which is purely conceptual. So the Congress doesn't have day-to-day responsibility of the running of the game. It's the it's the representative of the stakeholders. It's the overarching statement that says these are the people that own football, and they pass down the responsibility for making sure that the broadest wishes of the game are discharged to the board, who then appoint the administrators who actually do the day-to-day stuff. So,
but they won't always agree. I mean, that's very political process too. The more people you have in the Congress, the more they'll want the certain person on that board to be able to perhaps work in their favour. So, you know, if the federations and the clubs, by the way, I'd love them to come together, the federations and the A-League clubs, because suddenly we have most of Australia aligned in our sport, and that hasn't always been the case. In fact, they've been, you know, almost voting against each other.
But that's how democracy works. Mm. You know, that's why there are checks and balances within political systems. You have upper houses and lower houses. You have an independent judiciary. All of these things are about forcing people around a table to negotiate, compromise, and come up with what should be the best solution. It might not be the clearest solution. It might put noses out of joint for a short period of time, but overall, it should be the most satisfying to make all stakeholders feel like they have a voice and are contributing to the process. And as you know, as we discussed, the exclusionary nature of the existing system and the ability to draw from that's by design has put thousands of people offside, and whether it's as much just a philosophical exercise to convince people that the doors are now open, then fantastic, let's go through it.
I think a huge win from what I'm hearing Looks like the AAFC might have a seat at the Congress, which, I tell you what, remember we were talking about this last, the number parts, of, you know, 9-4-1-1, and, I mean, suddenly you've got to throw another one in there, you know, because no one ever really considered the AAFC under Rabbi Graham to be someone that could step up so quickly and be part of that. I mean, any other surprises that might be included in that Congress that we hadn't looked at before, because really the original numbers were member federations, A-League clubs, PFA. I don't think there was anyone else really, because PFA were looking at two votes, so one of which would be the women's game.
Exactly, yeah. No, and that's there's nothing that I've been told that would suggest that the same stakeholders won't comprise the same Congress to begin with. I think with a view to expanding. So, for example, Football Supporters Australia, once they become mobilised and they establish their mandate and a given time to appropriately reflect the supporter community, then one would hope, one would expect the way those meetings played out, that they would be fast-tracked into some kind of role. But it would appear that in this first round, it might be too soon. But what interests me now about the AAFC is they're now doing this series of nationwide roadshows. And I would encourage anybody who has an interest in what's been going on at a governance level, or just purely at a grassroots level and is interested in where their club fits within what the AAFC are doing, get along. If you're not happy with them, tell them. And this, if you've not listened to John Didlitz's hour from Monday morning, get on the podcast. What John says so many things that are worth listening to, but among them, when he was responding to that question about why the PFA deserves two seats on the Congress, he talks about accountability. And power has to come with an accountability. And this is now the case with the AAFC. Mm. It will be the case for everybody that wants a seat on the Congress. They have to be scrutinised. They have to be challenged. I admire what they've done. I've advocated for the voice that they've had. And we now have to, as commentators and as people in the media whose responsibility is to hold people in power to account, we have to do that now. So if they are ready for a seat on the Congress, we have to make them earn it. And I think I admire what they're doing with these nationwide roadshows. I think it's a fantastic initiative, a brave initiative. And this is the opportunity. If there are people out there with concerns, bring them up. Mm. You know, get your face in front of the people that are going to be making decisions. Mm. And the same with, you know, with Football Supporters Australia. They've got an open Slack channel. They're putting out surveys. This is an opportunity to get at the ground up. If you are the kind of person that would want to get your hands dirty in some kind of organisation, do it. Don't turn around in a year's time and say, I disagree with what you're doing now. Get involved. Don't just shout from the sidelines and use it. You know, see it as an opportunity to help those organisations improve. Like I say, the AFC has come such a long way so quickly. Mm. We want it to be a good organisation. We want it to be successful. We want it to prove itself when it is, as we're presuming, a Congress member soon, you know, whether it's immediately or in the medium term. We want it to perform. Mm-hmm. And these are the opportunities that we get to improve it.
Well, they're the drivers of the second division, and we all want the second division for many, many reasons. I was speaking to Joe Mullen this morning, former Adelaide City great, who's now coaching Campbelltown City in South Australia in the NPL. And he's just decrying this whole thing about, you know, they've got one or two boys who are 21 years old. They played at the A-League level, supremely talented, but had to come back down because they weren't getting game time at that level. But they've had to come down to a semi-professional level, you know, where these sort of players would be flourishing in the second division. I mean, that's where it's really hit home with all the talk in the last 3 months as part of FNR. Everyone's crying out for the second division, and that's why I really hope the AAFC are as organised and as forthright as they should be for that organisation to have a voice in that Congress. the road shows, do you know what they're actually presenting at the road shows, or is it a second division model, or what is it that they're doing with these road shows?
Yeah, good question. I don't know the details. It's one that we should throw out to any AFC members listening. My understanding is it's more just a look-see and feel about who they are, what they're doing, and an opportunity for anybody to provide their feedback to them. And it is, you know, it is probably nationwide. It's not just Melbourne and Sydney urban areas. It's all over the country. So I think it's you know, it's as much just an information roadshow. This is who they are and what they're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. So there we are. That's the status at the moment with the Congress. I know there are people out there who are bored, and I speak to local clubs every day, and no one talks about it. They're not interested at all. But it's really important that this next stage, that we move ahead unencumbered by perceptions that the FFA are stalling for some reason. I just hope their reason is for the good of the game. And it's hard to believe that it wouldn't be. I don't know. Maybe I'm just naive, but it's just hard to believe that it wouldn't be for the good of the game. I hope it's not 18 months of personality clashes and they just won't bend because there's so much enmity between the two parties.
I think
parties.
I'm going to have to put this diplomatically. If you follow the club's line of thinking, now clearly the clubs have a very clear self-interest in this, but if you follow the club's line of thinking, they've been asking questions for a number of months that haven't been answered or haven't been answered satisfactorily. And it led them to this 6-page document that they presented to FIFA last week, which contained so many questions that demand answers from FIFA, from FFA, that even if all of the answers are completely innocent, it's not impossible to reach a conclusion or to reach a position without necessarily a conclusion that you can question motives. And that's the problem. And why, you know, why you began what you just said about perception, we need to clear away that perception of anything other than what's in the best interest of the game.
Mm. So what would the FFA be thinking right now? This is, they've accepted it's for the good of the game. FIFA's come in. Are they going to stand back? Are they going to try and influence other ways? How do you think this is going to, you know, their role in all this is going to, and how they're accepting their role going forward?
That's a really good question, and I don't know. My answer to that is I'm...
Gut feeling?
My gut feeling is that they will have to lobby Zurich hard. They will do what they can to continue to get their point across, which is exactly what you'd expect. And then the big question is when this Congress Review Working Group is formed and passes down its recommendation, how swift and easy will those recommendations be taken on? Because as we know throughout all of this, there's the parallel processes of FIFA's jurisdiction and the FFA is an entity under Australian corporate law. And the two haven't been properly tested. There's been a presumption all along that FIFA has this, I mean, FIFA does have a power just to discontinue FFA's membership if it wanted to. And the indication is that it definitely hasn't wanted to do that, hence the amount of time between telling FFA to reorganize and actually putting its foot down. So that will remain a question until it's properly tested. But one would hope that there's too much at stake now, and FIFA's position appears to be so clear, and the stakeholder engagement of the past week has been so successful that you've got to think that we are now in a forward motion, and anything that diverted that would be seen as obstruction.
And of course, Jonathan, you wrote another article between the times that we've spoken, the unparalleled joy of the last minute football winner.
Yes.
I think you're referring to the Perth Glory winner over in the 97th minute.
Yes.
Winner over Melbourne City on the weekend.
Yeah.
I agree. I just think watching the unbridled joy of players celebrating that, and especially a club like Perth at the moment, who have just, they have gone through hell, and they're so inconsistent, but doing it at home against Melbourne City, the money bags that Melbourne City are, I think, they deserve that.
There's something as a fan, it's nice to write about football for a change. Mm. There's something about being a fan that I think is important never to lose in whatever we do in football, whether you're a player, administrator, a journalist. Just to kind of relate back to that feeling about why you got into the game to begin with, why you retain such an interest despite all of the evidence suggesting that it's a waste of your time, because of that moment, because of that single moment of joy that you share with strangers. And there is nothing bigger than a last minute winner because of the length of build up. So in this case, it was 97 minutes. I mean, when did Daniel Azani score? 44, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you've got a best part of an hour where your team's behind. You spend 97 minutes not ahead. It's a match that you have to win to keep your season alive. You've watched Melbourne City go down to 10 men. You've got all of these anxieties that have been bubbling away, discontent with the coach, issues with some of the players. You've seen Mitch Nichols and Mark Warren leave during the week, and you're like, what am I doing here? It's nearly midnight on the East Coast. And then that one counter-attack, and you could see it coming. Melbourne City trying to keep the ball in the corner, Bruno Fornaroli, I think it was, in a corner. And then the corner's smuggled clear. The ball's fed out wide to Joel Chianese. And then the next 6 or 7 minutes just feels, they just felt like they were inevitable. I mean, it was brilliant from Chianese, brilliant from Taggart. Poor defending from Melbourne City. But everything about that final moment meant that it didn't just come out of the blue. So, you know, sometimes you get a last minute winner and it might be a bit of a scramble, or it might be just a wallop from 25 meters or whatever. This had a real sense of expectation about it, which for me just heightened the whole thing.
Which so, gets the crowd involved. Absolutely. And it makes them want to come back next time, because they talk about the 12th man. It was like that. That whole momentum that was building after they scored that, the equaliser was quite late, and then they scored the winner. Yep. How much of, from a Melbourne City's point of view, how much is the anxiety in those situations? They went down to 10 men. They've been told by Warren Joyce all year, you make a mistake, you're going to cop a goal. You could just read it all over their faces. I can't make a mistake. I've been told by Warren, the coach, over and over again. I've been punished. I've been actually outed in the media for making a mistake, you know. And this whole idea of the focus was on let's not make a mistake.
Yeah.
And they did.
It was a corner. I think the commentators on Fox actually called it extremely well. They were like, do City stick or twist? Do they commit to trying to nab a late winner? Presuming that there was no chance of Glory going up the other end and scoring, which they did. And credit to City, the game was there for them to win in that final minute. If you've got a corner, it doesn't matter if you've got 10 men or not, you that is as good an opportunity as you're probably going to get. They just didn't deal with the second ball, and then they had the wrong players. It was Bruce Kamau. Yeah. And Nick Fitzgerald
had his back to Taggart, where he didn't open up his stance, which is just, you know, defending 101. But that's the sort of thing that Warren Joyce has been trying to hammer into them all this season.
Of course, but that's Bruce Kamau in the 97th minute of a game where they've got 10 men. I think there are certain moments where you just say, fine, you know, those kind of things happen. Credit Chianese with his ability to just check his run half a second to give Taggart the opportunity to move from the near post to the far post. And his movement, Taggart's movement in the penalty area is sublime.
It's instinctive, isn't it? I mean, you don't score as many goals as a young striker But he, as many goals as he has scored over the years, if you don't have that instinct. I remember interviewing him once. I said, what's it like knowing that you can score goals? You can score goals wherever you go. And he goes, I go to bed dreaming about scoring goals, and I wake up in the morning dreaming about, you know, wanting to score goals. Like, that's he's obsessed with scoring goals. But he's instinctive, that guy. If he can stay on the pitch long enough, you know, and consistently enough over time, he's going to be. He started the season brilliantly, if you remember, with some of the goals he was scoring. Let's hope he's right physically, and he'll be fine. The other moment that made me feel the way you've pointed out is the Daniel Azani goal.
Yeah,
there were a couple. Actually, it's really interesting. This whole weekend, there was a few of these moments where I'm thinking, my God, when he took on Djulbic, and you could see what was going on in his mind when he got the ball. Djulbic, obviously,
and we all did. Yeah, we all. Well. And that was what was so good about it.
Yeah, and
you could see what was going to happen.
The way he took him on, turned inside, and just, you know, hammered it past the keeper into the top corner. It was just world class, wasn't it? It just felt like that could have been Aguero.
Totally.
That could have been Messi or Ronaldo, and it would have been wow in any stadium around the world.
Yeah.
It was that good. And I thought at that moment, and I've said this a couple of times this week, at that moment I thought he went from being a boy to a man.
Yeah, I agree entirely with that. He's shown a lot of promise. He's done some brilliant things. But that was the first time for me where he had an opportunity to put his hand up and take ownership of a game and of a situation. And he did every single footstep and touch of the ball that he did, from the pass going down the channel to the ball going into the back of the net, was perfect. Mm. And it was with an intent and with a purpose, which was, it was...
There was no guessing, was it?
No.
You just knew it.
And you've got Dino Djulbic, who's a mountain of a man, and Azani's, 40 kilos ringing wet. But it was, there was no question who was the dominant person in that relationship. And, I go back to when I, you know, when you watch Cristiano Ronaldo coming through as a teenager going through these kind of moments. Ian Robin is somebody else that I remember. There was all of the skill, but then the moment where he realized he could be direct, his performance is transformed. And that was the moment for me for Daniel Azani. It's not about beating a bloke to embarrass him on a YouTube compilation. It's not about getting to the byline and trying to walk it into the net. That's the clearest route to goal. And it came from that first moment of possession where he chests it down. There was no doubt in his mind. It was a proactive first possession forward, which, I don't know, it almost seemed to speed the game up. Mm-hmm. And you could see that by that point, there was practically nothing Djulbic could do. And when you see a young player experience that on the field and you know that's the start of something, it was almost I don't know, maybe I'm getting a bit too carried away, but
no let's get carried away, let's enjoy this.
You could almost, in that period between him getting the ball and putting the back of the net, see the next 15 years of his career. Couldn't you?
Wonderful stuff there. Thanks to Jonathan Howcroft. Again, catching up with Carlos Alberto Diego on the Journos. Catch that program every day here on FNR, live from 8 a.m. We're off to our final break for the day here on the FNR News Hour. Back to wrap things up very shortly.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal! Cahill, it's his day! I can't spell that, Ronaldo! You just cannot!
FNR News with George Danikian and Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back for the final time today to the FNR News Hour. I've really enjoyed this hour of news. Might have to replace Louise and George in the weeks to come. Plenty more still across the FNR network later tonight. Be sure to tune in to the FFA boss, David Gallop, on Football Bosses. It's on 8 p.m. tonight here on Football Nation Radio. And if you haven't already, Michael Zapponi, one of the hosts, along with Tony Pinata of that wonderful program, has popped up a tweet looking forward to our interview with the FFA boss, David Gallop, on Football Bosses. Send us your questions and we will put a few to him. So if you haven't already, check out Michael Zapponi on Twitter. Get your questions in, have your say, and make sure you tune in because it promises to be a riveting discussion. Do not miss out. That is all. We are out of time today on the FNR News Hour. Thank you so much for joining me. It has been my absolute pleasure. But for now, from me, Adriano Del Monte, this has been the FNR News Hour. We'll see you next time.